morning or good afternoon, depending on where you're joining us from today. Welcome to today's webinar, Taming the SaaS Sprawl. SaaS is everywhere, and it's definitely untamed. You show me someone that doesn't use SaaS, and I will show you, definitely be able to show you a liar. And it's extremely easy to use, extremely easy to be able to sign up to. As security professionals and even inside and outside personal and work life, we've driven people towards MFA, passwordless cloud identities for our users, and given them the tools, the authenticators built into their phones or otherwise. And now, so signing in is extremely easy. Setting up accounts, joining online platforms, as simple as it can be. But it can also go very wrong. But it definitely doesn't have to. And that's what we're going to go through today. If I can just move my slide on there. There we go. So joining me today is the excellent Sam Lambert. So Sam is our senior Microsoft and cloud security architect that heads up our cloud security team within our professional services. Sam has extensive experience of designing, delivering cloud security strategies for complex enterprise environments, helping organizations balance agility, governance, and risk as they adopt cloud and SaaS platforms at scale. Welcome, Sam.
Hi, Rich. Thanks for the intro.
So just before I, we'll kick off and jump straight into it very shortly. But just before I do, just want to flag that this session is being recorded for anyone that may be interested to watch back or pass on to colleagues. And we definitely welcome your input into the webinar today. So there was a Q&A function that should be there just at the bottom of your Zoom window. So please open that up, ask questions as we go, and we'll do a dedicated Q&A session at the very end to go through those questions and provide you the answers. So put myself and Sam to the test. And lastly, should you wish to make use of it, there is a translation captions capability available as part of Zoom. So again, please use that if you want closed captions translation into your native language. So Sam, I'm going to stop sharing and I'm going to give the control over to yourself, and I'll let you kick things off in earnest.
Great stuff. Thanks, Rich. So hopefully you can see my screen there. So yeah, thanks, Rich. So today we're going to look at the challenges of SaaS sprawl and how rapid SaaS adoption often leads to fragmented application landscapes that lack of visibility and consistent security oversight. We'll also explore hidden risks that come with that sprawl, risks such as unmanaged data exposure, excessive permissions, and third-party access that often sit beneath the surface that go unnoticed until something goes wrong. We'll then talk about how organizations can balance business agility with the security compliance and effective control over SaaS tools, because those things don't have to be in opposition. Security teams are no longer known as the business prevention department. Historically, we kind of were known as the naysayers that said no. But today, an effective SaaS governance strategy should do the opposite. It should enable innovation by restoring order, providing guardrails, and allowing the business to move fast without sacrificing productivity or increasing risk. And we'll end with some quick wins. We'll look at the demo, looking at from the Microsoft portal and how you might utilize that to mitigate some of these risks. So with that, we'll dive in. So I thought we would start today with the cloud security shared responsibility model, which I expect many of you would have seen a version of this before. It essentially illustrates the security responsibility boundaries between the cloud provider and the customer. So here's one from Google. There's another one from Microsoft. You've got one from Oracle there, and finally one from Tenable. And they're all virtually the same. These sometimes differ, but they always have two components in common, no matter which one you look at. And the first is, first and foremost, the data. So you, the customer, is always going to be responsible for the data. So when we talk about why we even care about getting the SaaS sprawl under control, it really comes down to protecting our data. And the more data that we allow to live across these different SaaS platforms, the larger our overall attack surface becomes. And the other constant in all of this is the identity. If you look at cloud security shared responsibility model, identity is always owned by the customer, and that never seems to change. And that's why identity becomes such a critical control point, and it's something we'll dive into in more detail in the coming slides. And at first glance, it might look when you move to a SaaS model, the customer isn't responsible for very much, at least not compared to infrastructure as a service or platform as a service models. But I think where the SaaS challenge really becomes a challenge is the speed at which it can be adopted. These tools are often driven by end users, and there's usually a lot of pressure to roll them out quickly, which can accelerate adoption faster than security and governance teams can keep up with. And why is that a problem for security risk and compliance teams? Well, we'll start by looking at some operational risks, starting with uncoordinated SaaS adoptions. So organizations often acquire many SaaS applications without coordination, which lead to unknown and unmanaged software sprawl. When we look at uncoordinated SaaS adoption, we're really describing situations where organizations bring in multiple SaaS applications with little to no coordination. And over time, that leads to software sprawl, the applications that are either poorly understood or lightly governed. And to be clear, I'm not talking about the classic shadow IT here. That activity is often not so apparent, but this activity is often happening in plain sight with different departments operating in silos. And in many cases, this is driven by a lack of governance. For example, there's no clear defined process, standards, or information security policies specifically covering new SaaS applications and how they should be onboarded or offboarded for that matter. So now we've talked about the problem about uncoordinated SaaS adoption. Now let's look at the risks it creates. And those are obvious, but let's look at how we can perhaps combat these. And here are some questions to ask yourself. Have you made clear decisions on what your identity provider is? That could be Okta, Google, Microsoft Entra. And when new SaaS applications are requested, is there a mandatory integration requirement there that they need to consider before it's approved? Just as importantly, are those requirements actually clear to people requesting the software? Or do your users see SaaS as something they can simply spin up and connect however they like? And if we're being honest, if you step back and see a mix of different identity providers across your environment or inconsistent security controls that are being applied, it's often a sign that these decisions were never clearly defined or properly enforced in the first place. And this is really where IT security and governance needs to come into play. You need clear policies in place that define the rules, policies your employees understand, and importantly, are expected to follow. At a more practical level, that usually translated into a well-defined SaaS onboarding procedure. For example, once an application is approved, the request might flow to IT to make sure it's integrated with your single sign-on, ideally before it's widely adopted. In many cases, that integration should already have been validated during the proof of concept phase, so you know the capability exists and it aligns with your information security policies. And finally, this isn't just something you solve purely with directive controls. You need to tackle this with a technical control also, because with everything in security, we want to add layers of controls, right? And that might mean implementing technical controls such as your content filter. Perhaps you start blocking by category. For example, enterprise AI apps might be one category you choose to block. And that might seem like a blunt instrument, but because you're blocking outright, but it can actually be a necessary evil, particularly if you need to get shadow IT under control. So moving on now to complex integration and data flow challenges. So multiple SaaS integrations create complicated data flows that are hard to track and secure within organizations. One solution, of course, is to integrate everything with your identity provider, or IDP as it's commonly referred to as. And that's because you want to integrate everything with single sign-on so you can have that centralized authentication point, and that will gel well with your joiners, movers, leavers procedure. And ultimately, it'll give you a single kill switch. So, for example, when someone leaves your organization, you might disable it in the AD or Entra as classic examples, and that is going to sever the connection for the end user. So, when they leave the organization, they can no longer log in. But actually, more often than not, you've probably still got to do some cleanup there on the application side. The identity still exists. You just need to free up a license. And all of this will bring overhead and cost to consider. And this is going to add with every SaaS application you introduce. And the other hidden cost is with premium licenses. So, for example, many enterprise applications are going to ask for a premium license just to use their SSO capabilities. So this is worth considering at the front of the pipe when you're considering adding this as a security control. Not to mention also the maintenance overhead. So often these will need certificates that renewed every year or two. And that's not to say that we shouldn't be doing all of these things. We should. Just the added complexity is not a reason not to do it. In fact, we should be doing it. But it's just we need to factor this in as early as possible. Okay, so we've discussed the problem there. Now, the problem about integration and data flows. Now let's look at different ways that we can combat this. So first of all, we might standardize your onboarding requirements for SaaS applications. For example, you might mandate SaaS applications have certain requirements. For example, they must support SAML or OAuth, and that way they can be integrated with your SSO. You may require that they need MFA, or you might actually have some compensating controls. Perhaps all of the above is not possible. And then you might say, well, can it at least support IP whitelisting? And you might need to go a little bit more old school that it has to be accessed over the VPN, as an example. Other ways you can combat it is actually to reduce your SaaS inventory, which is easier said than done, I'll be honest, but it is worth looking at. And that can be a cost exercise. So you might have a cost exercise that looks at all of your paid subscriptions across the business, or you might be doing consolidation strategy and you're looking across all the different inventories, you're reviewing what's being used, and you might find, well, actually 80% of your users are using a SaaS application for one particular use case. And whilst the other 20% are using a similar application, which is the same set of capabilities, for the same purpose. Now, as part of a consolidation strategy, you might choose to mandate that the users migrate onto the majority are using, and that will have security benefits as well as often cost benefits. You might also favor SaaS applications that favor your identity provider. So, as an example, someone puts a request in for a SaaS application, and it is common to look at multiple ones for cost efficiency and all the rest of it. Now, during that point, you might start assessing their capabilities, and you might find one competing app supports SCIM provisioning versus the other. SCIM provisioning stands for System for Cross-Domain Identity Management. And for me, this is a gold standard feature. So, for example, it will allow you to automate user provisioning and user deprovisioning, as well as update permissions within the apps, which are initiated from your identity provider. So, in other words, you've got a single source of truth taking those governing actions and control the life cycle of the identity. Now, moving on now to limited visibility and security risks. So, IT and security teams will struggle with limited visibility and lack of inventories, which will increase the risk exposure. This is particularly true if there's been a lack of integration from your SaaS product. Similar to what we've just been talked about, if it's not integrated with your identity provider. But to go a step further, it might not also be integrated with your CASB solution. So that stands for Cloud Access Security Broker. And we'll take a look at Microsoft's version of that in the demo. But that is going to be a good tool to increase that telemetry data and get you a lot of data from the SaaS application. And it's a good way to combat shadow IT, because often you'll get someone thinking it's a good idea just to use a SaaS product without much regard to the overarching security strategy, and simply expand to examples where organizations get a lever and they've not thought about those security controls well. And that scenario can get missed from the lever process, so that the account is not being decommissioned. And in those scenarios, you can end up with it could be a data breach in that scenario. If someone's logged in, they've got access to data, they've left the organization. And these are all things we want to avoid, right? So let's take a look at how we might tackle some of these problems. So with limited visibility, this is going to lead to security gaps, which ultimately is going to result into that case of shadow IT. And the first step to combat this, in my view, is to improve the visibility. You can't govern or secure what you don't know exists. So gaining insight into the SaaS applications which are being used, how data flows into them, which identities are accessing them, and you might achieve this with a CASB solution. Which we've already discussed. In addition to that single sign-on integration, once you have that visibility, you can start closing the gaps. This is where the governance and security practices come together, defining standards around identity, access, onboarding, and integration, so that your SaaS adoption follows a predictable and secure pattern rather than an ad hoc one. And finally, combining clear governance with technical control enforcements will allow you to reduce these conditions that allow shadow IT. And we also want secure paths that exist, and these are easy to follow, that the user so that the user are far less likely to look at a workaround. Okay, so now let's look at some risks now. So we've got hidden risks. We'll start with the overexposure of access. So because you've not implemented the right controls, you might be allowing users to grant access to your SaaS applications in an overly permissive way to access their profile data. And this is where I believe you need to go above and beyond a directive control. So in other words, it's not enough just to have an information security policy that says that users shouldn't be permitted to do X, Y, and Z. We need to start introducing technical controls to actually prevent this type of behavior. And we'll look at how we can do this later on in the demo. Another example would be weak security capabilities. So for as an example, such we might look at lack of multi-factor authentication or otherwise inconsistent security controls, which heighten the vulnerability of the product. Now, checking whether an app supports SAML, it could be one protocol, or particularly if it's SAML 2.0, is another good one to check. Or at least more broadly speaking, does it support your single sign-on integration? Because there might be other protocols that your organization use and support, which will do just nicely, like OAuth 2.0. And at this point, you really want an application that can be integrated into your identity provider, particularly if you're looking at adopting a zero trust strategy, because if you want to funnel all of your authentication requests through a centralized policy decision-making engine of any sort. So this could be Entra, Okta, Zscaler, Netskope, you name it. Ideally, you want to be able to pick, you don't want to admit any old SaaS applications because you might find that they don't support the protocols needed to support your security solutions. And this is where it's best at understanding these requirements and adding these as security requirements at the beginning, at the design phase, or as early as possible in the software procurement process. And this is not after they purchase the product, which is if it's an afterthought, that can be a bit of a disaster. Moving on now, so the other risk we have is inadequate monitoring and logging. And that's why, and why is that important? Well, with limited logging capabilities in a SaaS, reduce incident detection and investigation effectiveness. So one capability I often look for when doing due diligence in SaaS applications is the ability to generate audit logs or activity logs, particularly if the application is running any critical services or working with sensitive data. We've also got the risk of third-party integration. So third-party SaaS integrations can inherit sensitive data access, as we've already discussed and looked at on that previous example. But this risk is often understated because when third-party SaaS applications are one of the most common hidden exposure paths. For example, when we grant applications access to Microsoft 365, Google Workspace, or Salesforce, or similar platforms, that application can inherit permission we approve, sometimes including mailbox files, calendars, or other user profile data. And over time, these integrations accumulate, ownerships changes, or vendor security posture degrades. And yet the access often remains. And this can create a blind spot where sensitive data can be accessed outside of our normal identity. And from an attacker's perspective, a compromised or malicious integration can be a cleaner path than compromising the user identity directly. And there's many real-world examples which won't take you long to find out there in the public domain, which have been exploited in this very exact fashion. Now we'll talk a little bit about balancing agility and governance. This slide is really about finding the right balance. On one hand, the business needs to move quickly. Teams want to adapt SaaS tools and help them to innovate and collaborate and stay competitive. And that agility is important. It's not something we want to remove. At the same time, speed without governance introduces risk. Without some level of oversight, we might end up with fragmented controls, inconsistent security, and growing exposure around our data and identity. Structured SaaS onboarding is another key enabler. When process is clear and predictable, teams are less likely to work around it, and security becomes part of the adoption journey, not an afterthought. Ultimately, the goal here isn't restriction, it's enabling the business to grow their SaaS footprint in a way that can be controlled, repeatable, and in a secure manner at scale. And if we think back to the skim provisioning capability, that's an example I mentioned earlier. Well, actually, if done right, that can in, that not only will in, that won't introduce friction, but actually it reduce friction because we're automating the process, which is far more efficient in the long run. And now we're going to skip to a quick demo. We'll have a look at some quick wins from the Microsoft portal. If you do have access to the Microsoft Azure portal at home, you may choose to follow along and check your own settings as we go. So I'm going to start with looking at enterprise apps. Now, many of you watching this demo, I'm pretty confident, will be using Microsoft as an identity provider. So they're signing in with their Entra ID to authenticate to third-party applications. Well, this use case might be very relevant for yourself. So whenever we're doing a security review, one of the things that we'll always check is the consent permissions. Now, if we look at these in order, allow users to consent from apps from verified publishers for selected permissions. So depending on your tenant, now this might have been allowing less restrictive less restrictive permissions. Now, if you've got a newer tenant, it'll actually default to this setting here. Now, it's worth checking if you are have you got if you have got this selected, what permissions you are allowing to accept as standard, because there could be overly permissive permissions at the API level, such as accessing mailbox as an example. That could happen. Now, if you've got a newer tenant or you've hardened your environment to some degree, you'll have this option here, which lets Microsoft manage your consent, which if you as you'll see is recommended in brackets there. But it'll also enable, if you see underneath, to consent to popular mail clients. Now, for me, it's not insecure, but it's not in a hardened state. So my advice would be, if you wanted to be in a hardened state and you're following the CIS standard for M365 security, you'll actually have this selected to do not allow user consent. Now, there is a trade-off operationally for this setting, because someone or some team will need to accept and consent to these applications as they get requested. For me, this stage gate is very important. It's has it been vetted, the application? Has it went through our proper procurement process, perhaps? Is it been has the security reviewed the capabilities? All of these questions can be asked if they simply are blocked outright, and before we validate that it can get accepted. So
Understand. I assume that's around purely around the application. Assess it once, add the permissions, and then users can use it rather than every individual user.
It's at org level. So basically, it'll be, so let's say, can you sign into, I don't know, some third party application? Then you'll get those prompts. It can access X, Y, Z, and it'll have those API permissions. And if it's being vetted properly, so the security team will make sure, well, actually, it has been properly approved. They'll consent it, and then that'll be at organization level that it's approved. So it is a one-time, approve. And another actually point, Rich, I'll say on that, is it doesn't retrospectively go back. So let's say that you did have the less insecure setting, and then you switch it. It's not going to go and block them outright, and they'll need to be pre-approved. So there is it's worth doing a retrospective and actually what has people been signing into already, and we can actually take a look at that. And it now actually is a perfect segue, in fact. So we'll look at cloud now. I'm going to just bounce over to the Defender portal. So in the Defender security portal, you'll have a blade here for cloud apps if you expand this, and the first blade I'm going to click is cloud discovery apps. So in this example, in my lab, we're using Defender for endpoint, so this integrates nicely with Defender for cloud. And it's going to be able to get us telemetry data in terms of what apps are currently being used in the environment. So if I go to discovered apps here, as you can see, I can see when it loads, I can see the different applications that are being used. And in the real world example, you're going to see a lot more apps in this, particularly in larger organizations. You're going to see, way more than what you're seeing on the screen here. And now you might start with, well, let's see what is the risk score of 3 and below. So the in Microsoft's CASB terms, the lower the risk score, the worse the application. And they will associate objective data points on how they have arrived at that. So if we take the first example, which is some kind of advertising app. Now, it's got a general risk score of 5 for a number of different reasons, but I'm more interested in the security side as a security consultant. So let's have a look at what that does. Well, it doesn't support SAML. Well, that could be a big problem for my identity strategy, because actually I need to integrate that with my single sign-on. So right off the bat, if you're vetting these solutions, you might start with low risk scores. Should it be allowed to be used on your estate? Is it sanctioned? Is it not sanctioned? Now, if it's not sanctioned, let's take an example. As you can see on this example, it is actually marked as unsanctioned. So let's just skip back here to mark it in, and we'll go for another application that hasn't been selected. So this one as I can see, is a score of 3. It's freely being used because I've not marked it as an unsanctioned application. So if I select this unsanctioned here, I get this prompt because in my lab I've not set up the prerequisites, which is another important point. But basically, you can connect Defender for Endpoint to work in conjunction with Defender for Cloud. So if you imagine Defender for Endpoint is the muscle, if you like, to actually take the preventive action and actually block this type of activity outright. Once I've marked it as unsanctioned, that will start blocking the application. So this is a good way to get a handle on your shadow IT. You can start blocking things outright, which shouldn't be on your estate. Now, you can see I've got a question. Actually, I'll go back to Q&A. It's just right at the end there. And I'll just take another example here. So if I'm going to expand this to look at categories. So on the left-hand side, you have categories. So if you don't know where to start, one of the places I like to start is cloud storage. And the reason for that is the cloud storage. If you're looking at a DLP strategy, these can be some open goals right here. So for example, I don't just look at risk score in this regard, because actually, if I just expand this out, there's some very reputable applications. Google Drive, for example, perfectly fine in terms of from a security standpoint. But actually, do I actually want end users to be able to access Google Drive? Maybe not if I'm a Microsoft house, because I want to be able to control my data for my upload, and I want to reduce those egress data exfiltration points as much as possible. So don't just depend on the risk score. You can also look at, is it relevant to your organization? Should it be approved? Should it not? And these are going to be some good tactics to look at. I can see quite I can see a related yeah actually I'll yeah I'll wait until Q&A at the end. Now the so next thing, just to quickly show you, is on we looked on the discovered apps, but actually what happens if they're prospective apps? So in other words, let's say you've got a governance process. Someone's requested a SaaS application. Now, you might have a process whereby the security team needs to vet those applications to understand should it be allowed, should it not. And sometimes security teams, there's thousands of applications. They're not going to know. They're going to have to do some research behind it. Well, I actually quite like to use it as a compliance tool as well. So, for example, someone's requested DeepSync. I can say, okay, well, what is it? I can see right off the bat here, it's a generative AI tool. So it's categorized it. I can see the headquarters is in China. I can see from a security standpoint the different elements it enables and it doesn't enable, different legality and compliance. For example, report data GDPR breaches. So apparently there's been a GDPR breach on the public domain, and you can start to see how it actually comes up with these various risk scoring, and that ends up getting aggregated to the number that you see. Okay, so just before we move off on this, now what happens if you're not using Defender for Endpoint, which many of you won't be? You might be using, many of the good EDR tools, and you're not using that, but you still want to get access to this data in terms of the discovered apps. So if we go back to Cloud App Discovery, what we can actually do here is we can create a snapshot report. So if I go into snapshot report here and create it, you'll get a prompt on the screen. You can go next. You would give it a report name, the description, and you've got a list of appliances here that are, many reputable appliances that you can see in the list. If yours is on the list, what you can do is select it, and you can upload your file logs into it and basically populate the same type of data in terms of app discovery, and then you can start doing that risk score stuff all the same as you would if it didn't get the as opposed to getting the data from data for Defender for Endpoint. So there's another nice little tip. If you're not aware of that capability and you are licensed for it, it's a good place to start. You can also automate it. So for example, you may want to automate this process so you can send it through a syslog server. So it's periodically sending the data to Defender for Cloud Apps, and that way you're not just doing a point in time, and that's another good technique to use there. So that is the end of the demo. I will end now for Q&A. So I will stop sharing and just have a look at what questions we have. You mentioned, do you read these, Rich? Have you got the questions there? Do you want to read
Yeah,
them?
no, I've got the questions
Yeah.
there. Let me just before we jump into the Q&A, I will just plug our Security First conferences that are going on around Europe and beyond into Africa, and will be extended to further regions throughout the year. So if you haven't signed up to those, you know, please do. There are obviously some great conferences that are really all around insights and thought leadership. And a great opportunity to get together and network with peers and people within the industry. We also have another webinar coming up on third-party tools and AI and how you can use those to secure your supply chain. So to sign up to any of those, you know, please use the QR code on the screen, and that will take you to the page to sign up to all of those. So let's move on to the Q&A, as you said there, Sam. So we do have a number of questions that have come in from people on the call on the webinar. So John, there's quite a few. Let's have a look at time. We'll try and get through as many as possible, but if we don't get to all of them, we will follow up with responses on email. So the first one there is, you mentioned disabling users is not enough and still require cleanup in the app. How important is an IGA tool here?
Yeah.
It's a pretty heavyweight tool, sledgehammer to a nut or achievable.
Yeah. So great question. So I guess IGA, and if you have the budget for an IGA tool, great. That's fa absolutely fantastic. So I would say, you know, that's the Nevada setup. You've got the budget, but also, you know, it's also, you know, as you kind of alluded to, the sledgehammer scenario. It's a beast of a project. You know, there's operational considerations, you know, from a technical stance, but also process heavy side. You know, so it's not, you know, it's something that, and if you're going to go down the IGA, you really need, you know, buy-in from the top. You need budget, you need your internal resourcing to be able to be aligned so that you can even have your BAs doing the process analysis and all that kind of good stuff. So I would say, you know, in the best case scenario, IGA would be perfect. Now, however, a lot of organizations, they can't really, you know, afford to be doing an IGA project. You look at the price tags on a lot of the best in breed IGA tools, they're going to be quite expensive.
Which
So,
is, and it's not just that, it's the lengthy implementation. I know some providers are, you know, using AI, and yeah, everyone's using AI, but looking at how you can streamline that. But it is, as you say, it's a big tool, big project. So I would say sledgehammer. But Sam, is there anything in the Microsoft Entra kit bag?
yeah, so I'd say that, so if you can't do IGA, then you've got to look at, you know, what's next best things, right? So I guess at a basic level, it's that, you know, it's that SSO integration. But as you kind of mentioned, it's not going to give you that full end-to-end capability. So you might be able to control, say, a single sign-on so that you're authenticating through your IDP. But what it's not going to do is kind of take those governance actions on the app side, which is where, so in that regard, okay, well, maybe there's manual processes that can kind of tidy up the, you know, the app side of things. Now, moving along in terms of, you know, more sophisticated sets of capabilities is why we point to that SCIM provisioning. So when I'm looking at SaaS adoption and capabilities, one of the questions I'll ask is, does it support SCIM? Now, a lot of the time they don't, unfortunately, because vendors are just kind of catching up or kind of, you're seeing it more and more, I see, as the years go on. But they kind of, well, I don't see it was like I don't see it as a very popular capability at the moment. However, the best in breed should have them. So you're like, you're using Jira, Confluence, things like that. You know, you can go and use the SCIM provisioning. So if you're absent of an IGA, you should be looking at, well, what capabilities in the app can I exploit to make the most of this? And if it does skim, then well, great, you've got automated user provisioning, deprovisioning, and also you can do things with, like, say, group sync. So you could have, let's integrate my Entra group so that it syncs to this Jira group over here, which then gives it a license and then gives it set permissions. So you can kind of do per person's IGA, I would say, with different sets of capabilities. So
Well, do you know what I say? I would say it's getting more achievable and outside a large enterprise. Definitely got to ask that question. Do you need to have aspirations towards it? You talked about skin there not being ubiquitous across all applications. So it doesn't sound like it's something that you can mandate as a requirement. But there's another question here that says, shouldn't we just mandate no SSO, OAuth, SAML, no application?
And so in an ideal world, yes. And if you can do that, great. However, what you'll find is in some organizations, you can't do that. What you'll find is there's a legacy application that, well, actually, if we put in the security policies to say that you need it, and then the auditor comes along and says, well, actually, you say that you need to support SAML, and you've got this legacy application over here that doesn't, that can create a problem. So I would say in the best, you know, the bet in an ideal world, yes, we do that. And actually, and another technique you can do is you could do it for new applications. So anything new, mandate it, or you could say you need it, and then you have an exception process. So anything that fits outside of that, your edge cases, your legacy apps, you properly document those exceptional cases so that if you are audited externally or internally, you can say, well, actually, yeah, this is approved exception. We know about this. And those scenarios, then you start looking at your compensate controls. It's like, so can you make sure that it's got MFA at least? Can you make sure it's IP restricted? These type of compensating controls, which hopefully will compensate for the lack of, these protocols and SSO, and then hopefully you can put a strategy in so that you can wean off that application. So it might be, well, actually, you start putting on pressure on the system owners, well, it doesn't support it, it's not up to spec. You need a plan as an exit strategy to migrate off this onto a best in breed or something that's compatible with our information security policies.
Yeah, definitely anything new should be doing that. I think certainly John, a lot of things comes down to the procurement process as much as it does or sorry, interfacing and working with procurement and that process to be able to set requirements, particularly when we're going to RFP. So the next question is, can you adjust the risk score for the cloud app?
Yes.
Just before you answer that, risk scoring, lower number is worse. Is probably the most backwards thing I've seen recently.
So you can adjust the risk scoring. So there's a button in it. I probably should have showed you. It says action, and then it says update risk scoring. So you can update your own risk scoring. So you might do your own due diligence and say, well, actually, you know what? This is, we disagree with Microsoft's rating here. This is, it's a, I don't know, it's a line of business app that we've vetted. It's secure, we're comfortable with. Let's adjust that risk scoring. You can also request that Microsoft basically adjust the risk scoring. So if they get enough of those requests, you can imagine it probably go into some pipeline and they'll prioritize them, and then they might say, well, actually, they've got a point. We've got thousands of users saying this is not actually, they disagree with our rating. You've got both of those options there.
Excellent. The next question is Defender for Endpoint essential to block unsanctioned apps?
No, it's not essential. I guess I would say use whatever you can in your security arsenal. So if you've not got Defender for Endpoint, maybe you look at other things. If you're on, say, you're on a Windows domain, you might need to use AppLocker, that you could block by AppLocker. You could start using, particularly from a SaaS perspective, you've got your content filter, so you can block, at an actual firewall level. And I discussed in the webinar, you can do that at category level, but also at domain level. So you've got, like, whatever you can use to block applications should be utilized. So I'd say not essential. It's just another capability in the kit bag that you might choose to use should you be licensed for it.
But those other examples you gave there, is that through integrating with Cloud App to be able to have that control centrally, or is it, really creating a bit of a manual process to kind of make that enforcement happen?
It depends on the vendor, but you can augment to a degree. So, for example, let's say you have got in the example we looked at the discovery of cloud apps. So if you said, say you've got a supported firewall appliance, then you could automate that so that you can at least get it from a discovery point of view. So you've augmented to some degree for visibility, but if you actually want to take that blocking action, then you might have to do it inside the application itself. So you might, to kind of pause out capabilities and processes so that they work in tandem together to get the result you want.
Excellent. So there's two more questions to go. If anybody's got any further questions, we've got a little bit of time, I think, to be able to squeeze some in. So please drop them in the Q&A. So the penultimate question here at the moment is the cloud app an on-off, or can you get more granular?
It's probably want know it, how much more granular you want to go. So, but essentially, what you can do with it is you can get, not just from a compliance standpoint that we looked at the demo, but you can actually start looking at traffic flow as well. So, for example, you can start to see the amount of data someone's uploaded. So you might say, oh, actually, this person has uploaded 5 gigabytes of data in, we're using this application, perhaps that's Dropbox or something like that. So you can see data flows, you can see usernames and profiles associated with it. You can also associate, if you integrate at a CASB level, you can start to do more things with it. So you could actually block downloads. So one thing we didn't talk about in the demo, which I'll just touch on now, is let's say you've got, I don't know, Jira as an example. You integrate that in with Defender for Cloud at a CASB level. What happens is it's basically a glorified reverse proxy. So it's funneling all of the traffic via Microsoft first and then to the application. Why might you do that? Well, that is when you can take more granular session controls. So, for example, you might want to block downloads. So, let's say you have a scenario where you want them to sign into Jira, but if they're on their personal laptop, you want to recognize that as an unmanaged device and you want to block download. Or you might start detecting mass downloads, on a particular application. So, that was going to be maybe an indicator of some kind of suspicious exfiltration behavior that you want to capture, and this will all be captured inside of Defender for Cloud App. So it's not as so it's I'd say it's not as simple as on off. There is lots of elements and components to Defender for Cloud apps, which depending on how far you go with the integration, you'll unlock more capabilities and get more visibility in terms of telemetry data.
Obviously, we've used Microsoft as an example, but other CASBs are available. Pretty essential, really, if you're going to get into some real control. Last question: what file format is supported with Discovery Snapshot?
So this will be where we upload the logs. So if you remember, there was a drop down box which shows the supported firewall appliances. So it's not necessarily a question of supported file format in terms of what's it ingesting, but it's more is that firewall log supported. So if you go to that list in the drop down box, if your firewall appliance is listed in there, it's basically going to want a log file to be uploaded. So it's not really looking at kind of the it's not it, it's but it'll be a dot log. And yeah, you can go up to like a gigabyte per file, and you can usually get about 90 days worth of data in there. So that's the answer.
Okay, brilliant. Well, that is. Oh, actually, sorry. Everyone is security aware in here, sending all questions anonymous. From an anonymous post there as well. So we're keeping that the clear. I mean, it is a security webinar, so so I suppose it's to be expected. Excellent. So I think that is the last question that that we've got. So with that, I think we are going to wrap up the webinar. So very much thank you to Sam for joining us and bringing his expertise and knowledge, and also for doing a live demo. I think I love a live demo. I'm just going to let everyone know that I ha did see the backup slides just in case it went wrong, Sam, hiding in the deck. So very well prepared. And I'm just going to say thank you to everybody that has joined today. Thank you.